start.
Well, it's great to be here this afternoon to do this interview, and let's start by you giving your name, place and date of birth, again, of course, since you've done it for the record, but this is on the tape. Perhaps I can ask you for that first.
I'm Verna Jean Killens. I commonly go by Jean. I was born December 20th, 1947.
And thank you very much. And since we're interested in the grain trade, I'll ask you if you could describe how you got involved in whatever part of the grain trade you were in.
In 1989, I began to work for Oglevie Mills Limited in Fort William. I was hired as a process technician.
And we'll get into what kind of work that involved. How long did you work for them?
I worked for Oglevie Mills Limited for 7.5 years. And after it closed, I went back to the same plant to work as the quality assurance manager. The name of the same plant was Riverside Grain Products.
And how long did you work?
A year.
Just a year.
Mm-hmm.
And was that the conclusion of your work in the grain trade?
Yes, it was.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's one plant, two owners, and we'll get into the particulars.
So it was 1989 to 1996 mm-hmm. as Oglevie Mills, or ADM Oglevie.
Mm-hmm.
And
right,
then
the
when it reopened 2 years later, Riverside Grain Products really only ran for about another year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I left before it closed.
Was Riverside a local reopening?
No, it wasn't. An American company named Southern Ventures bought the plant from ADM, Archer Daniels Midland.
Mm-hmm. I see. Right.
They were from the southern U.S.
So it was actually the southern U.S. that really deserved the name then of Southern Ventures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Well, what kind of work did you... Did you do the same kind of work throughout those 6-7 years?
I progressed. I started as the process tech and then went on to be... I believe the position was called shift technician. And while I was in that position, I assumed other responsibilities, purchasing, looking after health and safety for the plant. While I was employed there, new government regulations required WMIS training for all employees, and I became the trainer, and I did inventories of all the chemicals.
And you might say workplace health.
Workplace health and safety became very important.
Right. And the it was a WMIS was workplace health materials system.
Yeah.
Material information system.
Yeah.
Hazardous materials information mm-hmm. system is what WMIS. Might as well get that on the record just in case mm-hmm. WMIS has been forgotten when someone is listening to this. Well, that's an interesting array of work.
Mm-hmm.
How large an operation was it? How many people worked there?
When I first started, there were 115 approximately.
I see.
And when it closed, I believe there were only, when Oglevie Mills was shut down, there were about 80 employees.
Now, most of those would have been involved in the actual handling. Grain moved through the facility, did it? Like other elevators, or was it quite different from that?
It was an industrial grain producer. We bought flour from a mill in Medicine Hat, I believe, and we treated it to extract the gluten, or to separate it into gluten and starch, basically, although bran was also separated out.
So when people purchase gluten-free products, those would be based or would incorporate the kind of material that would come out of this sort of mill in terms of the flour, the gluten having been removed from flour, is that right?
the gluten, well, when gluten is a very important component of the flour, mm-hmm. and when it's removed, what you have left is bran and starch.
I see. And starch, yeah. of course, has its own
and there's not market. Very much that you can bake with starch alone.
Mm-hmm.
When people talk about gluten-free products, they're talking about rice and okay. other
not
materials that don't have the gluten, right. the wheat germ.
So this was wheat flour then being processed in this way.
Mm-hmm. Just, right. yes.
Yeah. Okay. Question, Owen.
What's gluten used for once it's processed like that?
Oh, it's used for all kinds of foods. Shaw's Bakery was one of our customers. They bought gluten from us for their hot dogs, for the buns.
Yes.
Gluten is the it's a protein, mm-hmm. and it's what gives breads its elasticity.
It's balance. Eh? So yeah. those hamburger buns are mm-hmm. sort of plump and almost bouncy. That's because there's yeah. extra gluten in there.
Yeah. But it's also used for crackers, cereals, all kinds of food products. At one time, we were looking into selling some to Asia to be used as a vegetarian sausage.
Yeah, what else would go in there? Just gluten. So
well, but there'd be a number of other ingredients, yes. of course, but the gluten would give it its shape.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a very good question. There's mm-hmm. no waste product that is left after it's being removed from the flour. Mm-hmm. Did the brand have a market as well?
Yes. And we made two different streams of starch. There was an A starch and a B starch. Mm-hmm. And the A starch was the desirable starch. And some of it was used to make food products again. It's a component of icing sugar.
Oh, is it? And one can buy starch, I think.
Yeah, we were making starches to make the glaze on crullers. Mm-hmm. You know, those donuts mm-hmm. with oh, the yeah, sugary crullers. Glaze. Pop-Tarts.
All kinds of good stuff.
Yeah, when I worked for Riverside Grain Products, one of my biggest projects was to devise tests for and help develop a starch that would be used for an M&M candy.
Really? I see.
You know, the sugary coating?
Yeah, I see.
To keep the chocolate from melting.
Starch was a significant component of that coating.
Mm-hmm. And then on the other side of the starch production, we were treating starches to be used for various industrial purposes, for coatings in paper,
mm-hmm.
for instance. That was the biggest one. And for adhesives.
Right. So that when one has a coated paper, starch is commonly or generally?
Generally.
The significant mm-hmm. component of that.
Yeah.
Well, that would, did that go to mills here, right here? Or were we
here in paper? Thunder Bay, or in the region, dried? And in the States.
Sure. I see. So you were working in a laboratory setting, I suppose, then,
mm-hmm.
monitoring the process. Can you describe what the process actually involved, the equipment involved and so on? Where all the guys worked, I suppose. Eh? Was it mostly a male workforce out there?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with the site? Well, there was a fire in about 1999 or...
I'm vaguely aware of that.
Yeah.
No, I don't really know the site.
But. Yeah. Well, it's on the banks of the Kaministikow
yes. yeah,
River near
is.
The Jackknife
right.
Bridges.
Yes.
And the plant and the warehouse burned down, but still standing are four silos. So we received this flour by rail car, and it was transferred to the silos.
It came in bulk?
Yeah, by rail car.
Yeah, flour, powdery stuff in the whole car.
Yeah.
It wasn't in bags or anything, just came in bulk.
Came in bulk. And then We believe my memory is really vague about the actual production now because I didn't spend as much time involved with that. But anyways, the flour was sifted to remove debris, and dough maker. There was a huge piece of equipment that it had a name, something to the effect of a dough maker, and the flour would go into this vessel, and it would be blended. There were paddles inside that would turn the flour around and around, and water and salt would be added to it. And you get something like a dough, and it would be, it would spend a certain amount of time in there, and then the product would go through various processes where the starch would be washed away from the...
it could be done sort of mechanically, if you will.
Yeah, in various vessels and pieces of equipment.
Yes.
And the flour, the starch would be extracted and purified.
Mm-hmm.
One of the machines used to purify the starch was called a centrifuge.
Mm-hmm. Spin it around. Mm-hmm. And so the higher grade would be further out, would be heavier stuff, and that would be the more industrial kind of starch. Am I guessing that right, or am I on the wrong track?
I don't think it's as simple as there were different screens and ways in which the various grades of starch were separated out. And we'd have A starch, which would be used for industrial purposes and for food. And then the B starch had a lot more protein or gluten and bran in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be dried and sold for things like briquettes, less quality.
For fuel.
Yeah, charcoal briquettes.
Yes.
Yeah.
To be pressed in with
or
coal.
Or as an additive for various animal feeds.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there was a way of getting the bran off, and that would be collected and dried.
Those were ones that you were monitoring in operation, I suppose, then, were you?
Through various kinds of physical and chemical tests, and
mm-hmm.
we were also responsible for ensuring sanitation.
Keeping the little rats out?
The rats, the insects,
yeah.
Bacteria, mold.
The doughy mass, then, that was used for, was that just broken down into these constituents then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought maybe you were making a pizza crust or something like that. But not
so No.
There were
a number of different ways in which the gluten and the different kinds of starches were dried.
Yeah. So I suppose the water would be required. And what purpose did the salt play in the process as part of this
just in facilitating breaking down
the water? Because if without that, of course, flour is incredibly light stuff, isn't it? It'll blow all over, and the water would be needed to sort of slow it down somewhat, I would imagine.
Well, it was just the start of the process of flushing out the starch.
Yes. Did you have any knowledge of how the process to do all of this developed, the industrial history of this kind of mill, or did you get into that at all?
No, not really.
I should ask you much more particularly what exactly you were beginning to describe what you did in terms of monitoring for...
Yeah, Ogilvy's built the industrial grain plants around 1946.
Okay, so
there's one in Thunder Bay and one in Montreal, Candiac.
Oh, yes.
And I suppose they were first just interested in finding a way to extract the starch.
Yes. Create the market. Well, those are not questions you're going to be able to answer.
Well, a lot of it just evolved with time.
Yes. Sogovis is one of the pioneer flour millers in the country, late 19th century. I won't say, I don't remember when they started, but certainly they were a major producer of flour by the beginning of the 20th century. And one of their, a member of the family named Shirley, a man, Shirley Ogilvie, was actually involved with the establishment of Abitibi Power and Paper at the Iroquois Falls Mill and so on. This was circa 1910 or 12. I did industrial, corporate history in the early part of the century and came across Shirley Ogilvie, but the company was a major operator with mills on the prairies and so on and so forth, including one in Winnipeg that they knocked down not very long ago. They exploded the flour mill they had there.
Yeah.
And so the product, and you were saying from the stuff came in from a mill in Medicine Hat then.
I believe so, impression. Yeah.
Right. So maybe with this kind of context and background, now we might ask you what a typical
days.
Or were there, they there, all
there,
atypical?
There was never a dull moment there. But as a process tech, I was working 12-hour shifts, and you go in the morning and collect samples from different places. We collect flour samples, process samples taken from production at various stages of the production, and then finished products. There'd be composite samples taken of the gluten that had been produced over the past 24 hours.
Because it was a process industry. It ran around the clock. Yeah. There was someone else covering the other 12 hours.
Well, when I, as Ogilvie Mills, we just had a day shift, but they were 12-hour days.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the operators did their own tests.
I see, during the night.
During the night.
So, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, product is tested at various stages, 24 hours a day, but a lot of what the process tech did was to calibrate the machinery. And so you'd have these process samples, and you'd test them, and then you'd check them against the instruments that the operators, for instance, could use.
You had an array of instruments in the lab, I suppose.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And would you go out to the equipment actually and make the adjustments, or you tell the operators what they needed to do?
Oh, we tell the operators if there was anything wrong that needed to be adjusted. One of the most important tests that we did was measure the gluten or the protein in starch, because of course we needed to keep it as low as possible. And so we would do a test to determine the protein content, and we'd report it. And if it was high, we'd certainly let them know right away.
Mm-hmm.
And they would adjust their process.
Well, I guess. So what happens if it's got out of sync, if you will, and if that's a good phrase for it, and it's the proportions are wrong and then they're adjusted? Mm-hmm.
Much of our product, the dry products, were packed in 25 or 40 kilogram bags.
They went into bags immediately.
Or super sacks.
I see.
That was about 1,000
kilograms. Were the bags dated?
Dated and numbered. Everything was very carefully. We would be able to track a problem.
Right. And so you could go back two or three bags to see whether it was already manifested there. If it were to be found in the product, would the stuff go back, just be tossed back in and sent through it again?
Oh, that's where the challenges came in deciding whether or not we would feed it in gradually, if we could, how fast could this.
Because you might find yourself checking, as I was inferring, a succession of bags.
That was quite the problem with some of our specialty starches, the modified starches. We'd definitely have to determine where the problem began and ended and how bad it was.
Mm-hmm. Because the purchasers were expecting a certain quality.
Yeah, we had specifications for all of our products.
Right. How many of you would be in the lab during this?
There were about eight of us.
Eight of you? Yeah. All women?
Although, no.
No.
No. And it did vary over the years.
And you were one of the, what was the structure in it? Were you all sort of equivalent as technicians? There would be someone in charge, I suppose, was there?
There was a quality assurance manager and another person who was called a specialist. And then two process technicians and two shift technicians. We had a microbiologist, and I was his backup. And
so, with what kind of, with a bachelor's degree in biology, or was it even better than that?
He almost had his bachelor's degree. He was in his fourth year in a correspondence program with the University of Waterloo when there was a strike at Ogilvy's, and this was before I came on board. And,
I haven't said he opportunity. Could,
he'd left it. No, it was a disaster for him.
No.
He'd brought his books to work, and when the strike started, the strikers wouldn't let him go back in to get his material so that he could study and prepare for his exams.
Oh,
and so he didn't finish his year.
Which makes me ask then, there was a union there, but I take it you may not have been part of the union.
No, we weren't part of the union.
Did you have your own union, or were you part of the management structure then?
Sort of. Yeah.
Part of ADM Ogilvy's with a manager?
There was a plant manager, a production manager, a warehouse manager, the quality assurance manager, and shift supervisors. There were four shifts, and there was a supervisor of each shift, and they were responsible for 6 to 8 men.
And so those workers had 6-hour shifts then? I'm doing the arithmetic
12.
Immediately. Oh, but there were four shifts.
Yeah.
I guess one has to allow for weekends and things.
Yes,
of course.
7 days a week.
Yeah, that's the...
Yeah.
Process industries are a real challenge that way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's very sad indeed. I thought he had more time to work, but in those circumstances, if poor fellow, and the union couldn't be persuaded. Of course, you were part of management.
I wasn't there then, and he didn't tell anyone. Like, I think he gave up.
Yeah. So I would think that if he'd gone to the strike captain or whatever and explained that he needed to get that stuff out, they surely would have got it out for him by whatever means, if not letting him go in himself.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's before your time, you were saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know he was very bitter. Oh, he was bitter forever after.
Yeah. Did he continue to work there then?
Yeah, he did.
So he was there when you were there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He worked in a little lab all by himself, and
it was not a happy place. His little lab.
I didn't mind being the microbiologist for a few weeks every year to give him a break, but I wouldn't have wanted his position. It's just too lonely and isolated.
Mm-hmm. Because of the fact that he was... Did he have to be off by himself?
He was over in the office building.
All the more reason to see him as part of management.
Yeah, and he kept the door shut.
You left it open when you were working there?
It depended what I was doing. If I was working with a lot of acids, I'd shut the door so that everybody else didn't have to breathe it as well.
Mm-hmm. What kind of background did you bring to the position today? In terms of the chemicals that you're alluding to now.
You mean my qualifications?
I suppose.
Yeah, Bachelor of Science, Chemistry major.
Was that an important qualification to get the job initially? Did the other people, he didn't have a bachelor's degree, so you were obviously better qualified.
By the time I started, that was a requirement.
Was it?
Yeah.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of protective gear did you have when you were working with these various solvents?
We had fume hoods and goggles, face shields, gloves, aprons, the whole bit. Big arm things, arm coverings for when we work with sulfuric acid.
Yeah. You never felt that you were not properly provided for. You didn't feel unsafe in doing that work, given what they provided.
No, I didn't. And yeah. And if there was something that concerned me, I could always bring it up and we'd work to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I became involved in the safety committee and various endeavors regarding safety in the plant right from the beginning.
The WIMBA system came in soon after, was applied in the plant, soon after you started there, or was it already in existence a bit earlier?
I think it was 2 or 3 years after. I did inventory of all our chemicals and make sure that we had MSDS for everything and
meeting.
And that material safety data sheets.
Right.
So that everybody would know what they were handling and what the hazards were, what precautions they should take.
Mm-hmm.
And we developed a lot of safety procedures through this whole program.
I wonder if that was staggered through industry, because I was MP, of course, 84-88.
Mm-hmm.
And my memory now is that I ran across WIMAS arrangements at forest industry operations by the summer of 88. Now, I could be wrong on mm-hmm. that, of course. But so if this would be 3 or 4 years later, it's possible then that they didn't apply to all industry immediately at the same time.
It wasn't something that could be instituted immediately.
No.
It was very expensive, very time-consuming when you think of all the training that had to be done.
Yeah. Did you feel that it made a significant improvement in the operations of the plant to have the WIMBA system brought in and imposed on the company, in effect?
I think it did because of issues with workman's comp, for instance. I'm sure it cut back considerably on some of the accidents that might have happened.
Were you aware of accidents in the plant?
Yeah, there was really nothing major. Eye splashes, chemically related, no.
No. So what you're suggesting, I guess I'm wanting to ask that is the process itself, or the machinery, operation of the machinery and so on and so forth, could involve its dangers for workers.
Mm-hmm.
If that's what you're alluding to, I suppose, in terms mm-hmm. of things that happened.
Yeah.
There were no splashed with sulfuric acid, but there were things that happened in the process that could be unhealthy, shall we say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were a lot of skin issues. Flour is very drying.
Mm-hmm.
Many people had problems with contact dermatitis and
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing.
How much of a sense of the workforce in the process part of the mill itself would you have? Was there any amount of turnover? People discovered that they really weren't able to do this kind of work in these circumstances successfully?
Ogilvie's was one of the really good places to work. People didn't generally quit their jobs there. It was a wonderful place to work.
Well, that's always good to hear.
Yeah.
And the union there would be...
When it burned down, I'm sure that half of the people who'd ever worked there before were standing on the road watching it burn, and many of us had tears running down our faces because we'd all hoped that it would reopen.
And the fire pretty well took care of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's the cause of the fire?
Arson.
Discovered? It was arson.
Yeah, a couple of little boys.
Not meaning to burn it down, I suppose.
Well, they were playing in there, and it was abandoned at the time.
Yes.
They were playing in there, and someone lit a little fire, and it got out of hand, and they ran for the nearest fire extinguishers, but they were all discharged because they'd also been playing with them. They're lucky they got out with their mm-hmm. lives.
Their identity
and,
was actually
and
known.
And it's fortunate that there were ways of breaking in there, and my first thought was, I hope nobody's sleeping somewhere in that building.
It hadn't been adequately fenced off then, I guess.
It was fenced off, but you could get in there. I had to break out of it once. when it was Riverside Grain Products, we weren't running a seven-day operation. And on Friday afternoon, I was working in the office and trying to catch up on some paperwork. And everybody else left. And I went back to the plant to get my purse and my car keys, and the plant was locked. And I was also locked out of the office. So
no cell phone, I don't suppose. You rink.
No, there wasn't a phone for some reason that I was locked out of the office, locked out of the plant.
Call, I guess.
So the place was enclosed with fence. And I found a place in the fence where I could crawl underneath, and I went over to the bingo hall that was nearby and used their phone to call someone to come and open the plant for me so I could get my keys.
Well, that's how one discovers how the little guys got in, probably. Crawling in under. And little guys, of course, will reconnoiter a location like this.
Great you care. Couldn't drive in, but you could definitely break in easily. Yeah.
Did the shift from ADM Ogilvy to Riverside involve many changes? You mentioned the change from the seven-day-a-week operation.
Huge changes. They tried to operate with a staff of 30.
As against?
80 when it closed.
80 when it closed.
And whereas with ADM Ogilvy, men would be trained to do a position, say they were the ring dryer operator, and they would stay in that position for a year or more and then perhaps move into another position for a period of time. Most people were trained just to do a few jobs. But with Riverside, cross-training became imperative, and there were a number of new employees, and they were trained on everything. If they weren't very busy as the P&S operator, they would move over and to the warehouse and do some bagging for an afternoon, packaging product.
And I suppose the plant manager or subordinates would be watching to see how well they could get everything done with just those 30 people.
Yeah, and I think they were realizing it was impossible. They thought that they could get by with just me at first. And
in the lab.
And then I hired another technician, and even that wasn't enough, so we hired two more.
The person managing the
lab? We were running the lab 24 hours, days a week, with... at first it was just Stella and myself, and I was working about 80 or 90 hours a week.
They paid you accordingly?
No.
No.
No, I was salaried.
Salary.
I reached a point where I just couldn't do it anymore.
No. The management for Riverside was the same people, some of the same people? Well, were they the same people as there had been earlier? Or were
no,
the manager
they
came
weren't.
In?
One of the presidents of Riverside was Dennis Saunders, and he at one time had been a salesman for Ogilvy Mills, and he didn't stay in Thunder Bay. He wasn't there on a day-to-day basis, and a plant manager from Decatur, I believe, Rick Nutter, he came as the manager, and then they hired Stephen Hessian to be the production manager.
From Dumpter?
His son.
Oh, his son.
I don't know if you know him.
I know Steve, senior.
Yeah.
I see. What was he like?
I